Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, we are chatting with John Rubino, founder and editor of the Dollar Collapse website. And John, there's a number of different topics we could go down here simply because, look, there's a lot of uncertainty in the world right now when it comes to the war that is still ongoing between Russia and Ukraine, as well as upcoming Fed meeting, most likely Fed rate hikes. But boy, oh boy, expectations of a 50 basis point rate hike, those have come way off the board, and now it's looking more like a 25 basis point rate hike. Let's start with the commodities broadly, because commodities, as much as they were the topic over the last couple weeks in terms of really going vertical, we've seen a bit of a pullback. Number of reasons potentially for that pullback, but John, I'll open up the floor to you. Why do you think we're seeing some weakness, a general pullback coming for the commodity sector?
Hey, Corey. Hey, Shad. Well, okay, there are two big things happening out there, either of which could account for a pullback in commodities. One is that interest rates are spiking right now. The U.S. 10-year Treasury yield is well above 2%. So we're getting close to that what number breaks the market story now with interest rates going up. And that could do it. You know, that could lead to recession fears, which in turn leads to people selling off commodities because they're so cyclical. You know, they're very sensitive to economic growth. The other is the Russia-Ukraine thing. You know, a lot of the reason that commodities have spiked lately is that Russia and Ukraine, between them, produce an awful lot of commodities, you know, and if we're going to tie up Ukraine's, for instance, agricultural economy, and then sanction Russia out of existence, then that means a lot of stuff that we normally buy is not going to be available anymore. Therefore, the price is going to go up, you know, so that's all true, too. And it could be that the markets are now expecting Russia and Ukraine to cut that deal and end this war. And that's why commodities are selling off. And, you know, it would be very easy for them to do it. It's not a complicated conflict over there. Russia just wants Ukraine to promise not to join NATO and to maybe let some of the Russian-speaking parts of Ukraine decide their own destiny. And Ukraine wants Russia to stop invading, you know, so that, you know, it's a fairly simple document that they would have to type up to end this war. And because of that, it's highly likely that it does happen that way pretty soon. So that could be what the markets are anticipating. But you know what? There's no way to know. This is probably the most eventful week out of a lot of eventful weeks where you guys and I have talked. Because besides the Russia thing, there's just an awful lot of other stuff going on, all of which are consequential.
Absolutely, John. There's a confluence of events going on, and it's hard to know which one to focus on. I don't think anybody knows how things will resolve with the geopolitical tension. But as you mentioned, from a high level overview, it wouldn't be a hard fix. But real life is never that simple, and there is the potential it could keep running. But with the Fed getting ready to hike rates, after we just saw a CPI reading of 7.9% last week, kind of forcing their hand to get on the stick, is there any potential in your mind, John, where they will use the geopolitical tensions as a way to maybe punt for another month? And could that be a surprise to the markets? Because we saw Canada wait an extra month and we saw Europe punt. Is there any potential that the Fed doesn't start their rate hiking cycle in March, as everybody has assumed is a done deal?
Oh, I think pretty much anything is possible from the Fed this week because, you know, inflation, as you said, is raging. Official inflation is 8% right now, which means real inflation is 12, give or take. And in any other era of American history in which the Fed has existed, that would lead to a big rate increase, right? Because you can't have zero interest rates and 8% inflation. That's just cognitive dissonance all around there. You can't do it. So everybody expects the Fed to raise interest rates. At the same time, though, the economy is slowing down. The Atlanta GDP Now measurement of real-time GDP growth is zero. And interest rates are already spiking at the long end of the yield curve, which means monetary policy is already tightening dramatically because of market forces and expectations of Fed actions. So the Fed is really, you know, they can't be sleeping well as they get ready to make these decisions, because who knows what they should do? They don't know. They've never really known what they should do. You know, the Fed is a very stupid institution run by people who are operating on faulty models and who don't have much real world understanding of economics and finance in any event. So you can count on them to make the wrong decision. But in this case, what the wrong decision is not clear, because pretty much anything they do runs the risk of an extreme market reaction in one way or the other that won't be welcome. So it almost doesn't matter now what they do, because you're going to get weird, disturbing volatility in any event, just because the system is so messed up. So it's a fascinating time to watch what the Fed does, but I'm not sure that it matters in the sense that there's a right thing and wrong thing for them to do. I think anything they do is going to be perceived by many as wrong, just because the things they've done in the past were so obviously wrong that we've built up, you know, an immense amount of debt, huge amount of leverage that has to be worked out somehow. And you can't do that in a pain-free way. So we have to take that pain, and that's where we are. So the Fed is kind of almost, I don't want to call them a bit player, but it's not like they really matter all that much anymore, because the markets have taken on a life of their own.
So, John, as we get closer to Wednesday, and who knows whether the Fed hikes rates or not, what market moves are you going to be watching? I am asking this because most likely the Fed will hike rates. Maybe they won't. What do you think is going to be most interesting to see in terms of market reactions, considering what we're already seeing early this week, which is some of the safe havens pulling back, some of the defensive assets pulling back, and the bond market already selling off? We had a spike in interest rates already today. What do you think is most important to note as we do get whatever the Fed's decision is on Wednesday?
Well, a hawkish Fed would be bad for commodities and precious metals in particular. A dovish Fed, where let's say they focus on the fact that there's this big war out there and interest rates are already up at the long end and the economy's slowing down, and they don't raise rates, that would probably be very good for commodities and precious metals. So, okay, the Fed is consequential in the short run for market moves. But I think the big thing involving the Fed out there is when people realize that they cannot fix any of this. And if they choose not to raise interest rates this time around, that might be the conclusion that a lot of people come to, that they're going to say, wow, you know, if the Fed doesn't raise interest rates in the face of 8% inflation, how are they ever going to raise interest rates? Oh, that means we can never have normal monetary policy. That means easy money forever. Oh my God, I better buy, you know, XYZ real asset class. And so that could happen. And I think that would be the more consequential thing. A quarter point or a half a point increase in interest rates just seems like such a non-event in the face of 8% inflation, because you really need positive real interest rates if you want to restrain inflation. So to get from here to there would be like 800 basis points for the Fed, and the chances of them doing that are nil. So a tiny interest rate increase is liable to reassure the markets in the short run and then terrify them in the longer run when they realize that that might be it. So I don't know. I'm sorry, I don't have any kind of definite answers for you here. This is an incredibly uncertain environment with all kinds of things that can go wrong. And the idea of picking one thing out and focusing on it right now is kind of daunting to me. There's just too many cross currents, too many big things that could happen. And almost all of them are bad, but there's no way to know which is going to happen first and what the initial and then secondary effects will be. It's just one of those times.
Yeah, John, it's really wild to think about where we are as far as prices and commodities, companies' earnings reports, geopolitical tensions, and possibly even stagflationary situations where we're seeing expectations for GDP growth to be pretty much close to nil for the first quarter while they're getting ready to start this Fed rate hiking cycle, which, as you just pointed out, we can be certain about one thing. They can't normalize rates anytime soon. They cannot get positive real rates. We know that for the foreseeable future, because as you said, they'd have to do an 800 point rise just to get at parity with where the CPI reading came in. Now, is it possible that inflation does start to taper down throughout the course of this year, and that that does help the Fed if we started seeing inflation pull back from 8 to 7 to 6 to 5 as some of these base effects roll over from last year to this year? Could that take some of the pressure off? And what effect do you think that would have on the general markets and on the precious metals?
That would definitely take some of the heat off. But if say, commodities correct a little bit or plateau right here, that's still at a really high level. So it's debilitating for the economy. Meanwhile, the food thing is a very big deal, because it looks like the agricultural market is going to be disrupted for quite a while going forward, because besides the Russia-Ukraine thing, where they're big agricultural countries and they're either being sanctioned or inhibited by the actual war itself, which means that food prices are going to spike in the short run, almost guaranteed. Then meanwhile, you've got a very bad winter wheat crop in China, and you've got bird flu in the United States, where a lot of chickens and turkeys are being infected with results that aren't totally predictable right now, and plus a lot of other stuff going on out there. And if food prices continue to rise or spike and then stay really high, that's a problem for the economy, and not just in the US. Higher food prices are right up there with higher fuel prices as instigators for civil unrest in a lot of the developing world. And so that could be another issue that that is kind of a wild card going forward. So yeah, we could see pockets of disinflation or deflation, and then other pockets of still raging inflation. And it's going to be hard to sort it out, or it's hard to sort it out ahead of time. You know, we'll figure it out when it happens. We'll know what's going on. But right now, it's hard to tell which thing is going to be more important going forward.
So, John, kind of elaborating on that, when you mentioned we'll figure it out when it gets here, that ties nicely into all these supply chain issues and also the energy sector, where we have seen energy prices spike. It was late last week we had somebody on the show that said there are still strategic reserves that can be used to pull back prices. OPEC, who knows, maybe they can actually increase production, although they seem to be having trouble there. Do you think that we can get through these recent supply chain disruptions and this higher inflation in, let's say, the medium to long term? I know there might be some pain. There already is some pain right now, but do you see a light at the end of the tunnel?
Well, I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tirade right now about how stupid the globalists turned out to be when we're talking about supply chains. Because we set up these global supply chains thinking that, oh, you know, comparative advantage, low prices, just-in-time inventory, that the global economy would work beautifully set up that way with everybody in every country doing the thing they're best at. And it did work in good times. But at the same time they were setting that up, they developed this idea that it's okay to use the world's reserve currency and the world's bank clearing network as weapons to punish anybody who steps out of line in terms of the you know, the global empire. And so what we're doing now is ruining the supply chains by threatening them with, you know, expulsion from the SWIFT clearing system, or we're, you know, we're going to take your foreign exchange reserves and confiscate them and stuff like that. So that's going to force a reorganization of these global supply chains in a way that has to go on for a really long time. So we're not going to go back to status quo ante, you know, before the COVID pandemic, when global supply chains worked pretty well. We can't go right back there, because we've screwed them up for other reasons besides just the COVID lockdowns. Oh, and there is another lockdown in China, by the way. That's right. They have a big industrial center that just got hit with a wave of COVID, and they locked that down, which is going to be a big supply chain issue no matter what for a while. So it's going to take a really long time to sort out, you know, who's going to buy what from whom, using what currency, and where the factories are going to be placed. And that's going to make the global economy a lot less efficient, and it's going to raise prices independent of everything else that's going on. Even if everything else in the world gets settled, we still got the supply chain thing that is going to take years to sort out, if we ever get back to a point where the system is as efficient as it was before. So I think that's a built-in inflationary factor that can't possibly go away and is going to be with us for quite a while.
Well, John, this brings up an interesting topic, since many of us are invested in the resource sector, and in particular in the extractive companies and the mining companies and the oil and gas companies. Do you think this ties into Robert Friedland's point that there's going to be a revenge of the miners? And what he means is eventually people will realize that if they want to have these clean energy and green energy initiatives and EVs, and if they want the infrastructure for all the charging stations, and if they want smartphones and windmills and solar panels, they're going to need more raw materials. And this really highlights the focus on getting more domestic supply. So whether that's North American supply or West African supply, is this a revenge of the miners moment where we'll see more public support to get these mines into development and production? And could that be a boon for the resource sector?
Yeah, very possibly, because we definitely need more of a lot of things like copper and zinc and nickel and silver. But we don't trust foreign supplies of those things anymore because we screwed up the supply chains and we've antagonized everybody out there. So yeah, pretty much every country that has a technology sector or a transportation sector or a communication sector, which is to say pretty much everybody, is going to want reliable sources of crucial metals and other materials, which means, yeah, you have no choice if that's your attitude, but to make it easier for miners in one way or another. You got to lower their costs, which means you've got to scale back the environmental restrictions or other restrictions. And that's going to be a tough one to swallow for a lot of countries. But the alternative is going to be shortages of crucial stuff. And I think in the end, most of them will end up becoming mining-friendly places to the extent that they're not now. You know, Canada has always been pretty mining-friendly, but I think they have pretty strict environmental rules. And the U.S. is not very mining-friendly with extremely strict rules of every kind. So I think we probably need to change more than Canada does, but everybody is probably going to have to do that. And yeah, that's other things being equal, that's a really good thing for the miners. It's a good environment because there are shortages of the stuff that they have in the ground, and everybody wants to make it possible for them to get at it. So you'll have high prices and less regulation, which, yeah, it might be a really good operational environment for a lot of the miners, which makes them just that much more interesting. You know, the gold and silver miners are already interesting for a lot of reasons, but the world is kind of moving in their direction, it looks like.
Yeah, if regulation could move even more in mining companies' favor, and if they could somehow get a handle on costs, then you know what? That's a totally different environment that we have seen for resource companies broadly. The world has kind of gone against resource companies when it comes to permitting and all the hurdles and red tape they need to get through. We'll see if that plays out. The world definitely needs more commodities, as we're seeing by some of these price spikes, but we'll see how quickly governments and people are to react to that. Hey, John, great chatting with you as always, buddy. It's going to be another interesting week with the Fed meeting, and we're already seeing, again, volatility, especially in the commodities, to start this week off. John, thank you, as always, for your time, man. We'll chat in another couple weeks.
Great. Thanks, guys. Talk to you then.